You can sing and recite the church's hymn book, the Psalms, using modern English and new musical settings in the new Concordia Psalter. Check it out at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase the Concordia Psalter by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Make the Concordia Psalter part of your devotional life this year. 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, the new Concordia Psalter.
The state of our union is only as strong as the state of our families.
The pro-choice position at its very core is a position of bigotry. When you divide the room or the womb based on subjectively chosen arbitrary standards, you no longer have a commitment to human equality.
In the day of judgment, I don't think that the Lord is going to say, well, you may have celebrated these blasphemous cartoons, but at least you upheld free speech.
Jesus really is the quarterback, not Perry Noble. But Perry Noble, by doing what he's done, not only set up an end run around Jesus, he started playing for the other side.
Confessional Lutheran Deadheads love Issues Etc.
There's no doubt about it. We can look around and see how the pro-choice view, how abortion is being marketed to us, to our kids, especially to our young women in society today. There's a full-blown campaign. It is well-funded, one of the most well-funded campaigns, to in subtle and less subtle ways market abortion, make it every day a little more socially acceptable, especially even in a society where it's still somewhat socially acceptable. Did that marketing just start with the advent of Planned Parenthood, with television, with radio? How was the idea of abortion and all the presuppositions behind the pro-choice position sold to the American public, to the average person in America, even in the earliest days? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. We're broadcasting live from the Symposia at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk about the early marketing of abortion with Dr. Peter Scare first in this Thursday afternoon, January the 22nd, the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. And then in hour two of Issues Etc., Dr. Jay Budziszewski joins us from the University of Texas. We will talk about the new paganism. Now, you can join us for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at Issues ETC, or our beloved on-demand listeners, use the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382, 618-223-8382. Dr. Peter Scare is a regular guest. He's Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He made a presentation at a recent LCMSU conference titled Margaret Sanger's Trojan Horse. Peter, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Well, I'm glad to be on your show, and I have the opportunity to welcome you to Concordia Theological Seminary.
It's very nice to be here. This is, of course, the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. I think ordinarily, if this weren't the symposia week, you'd probably be in Washington, D.C., or out on the streets of Fort Wayne, probably very publicly making your position in defense of the unborn and of human life from beginning to end a very public matter. I know that you do that. What are your thoughts on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade?
Yeah, this is a great day for our seminary, but it's also a day of sorrow for our nation. And I've been kind of on the forefront of this issue, certainly here in our Fort Wayne area. We had a great march on Saturday. And one of the things I'm gratified by is the fact that our own Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is taking such a lead role in defending life like we've never done it before. And last night, I had the great opportunity to go to our Lutheran high school, Concordia High School. And in the old days, it was just the Catholics who went on their buses, and they made their pilgrimage, if you will, to Washington, D.C. Last night, I was there with an entire busload of kids, high school young people, who were going to go, and they spent the night sleeping on the bus, and they marched today for life in Washington, D.C., And if you ever have the opportunity to go, and maybe next year I'll just say, let's all go together. It's a 500,000 strong that walk up the steps, walk up the hill to Capitol Hill, and it's marvelous. Today I heard there was good weather, decent weather in the 40s. I've been there when it's much, much colder. And yet every year the Christians and those who care practically shut down that city. And it's the best march you'll ever see because these people are inspired. These are not angry people. These are not people that are yelling or shouting. These are people that are singing. These are people that are praying. And you see the smiles of so many young faces. And they're determined, but they know that God loves us and they know that they're on the side of angels. And certainly my heart and my thoughts are with them, today. And it is a glorious day. One thing I think I'd like to add is just to put this into perspective and the work that we need to do. It's 500,000 strong that'll be there today, maybe more. But then also think of this. Every year, over 1 million lives are lost to abortion. So 500,000 march today, but for 1 million whose lives will be lost just this year. So it shows you what a great task and what a great hill we have to climb. But when you're among so many young people who believe so fervently and are moved by the love of Christ, and you see all the pictures of the Christ child and all the pictures of the nativity, you can't help but be inspired. So maybe next year, let's go together.
What we're talking about, tens of millions of abortions since Roe v. Wade, and that's in the United States alone. And I imagine if you would have even said to the minds on the Supreme Court who made this great judicial mistake, if you would have said to them, by this year you're going to have 50 million, by this year you're going to have 100 million abortions done, they would have said no. It's never going to be that big. We're making a thing. This will be an exception. Women, they'll want their babies, but we have to make the exception for the woman who can't bear the thought of living with a child or who has some other circumstance. But the marketing of this idea, this single idea of it's my life or the baby's life and I choose my life over the baby's life, has been perhaps the most successfully marketed idea in the history of the United States. Would you agree?
You're right. I mean, I guess in my day we used to have a sign that was McDonald's. And at McDonald's, you'd always see the sign of how many millions have been served. And the numbers would go up on how many hamburgers they sold. And it's almost become like that with abortion. And the numbers are simply staggering. And the kind of effect that it's had on our society and the way that we look at life, I think, goes beyond even our conceptions. Because it goes to the very way that we think about life. And it affects not only the children who've lost their lives, of course, but it affects the mothers who were culpable in this act. It affects family members and loved ones who help support this act. So it really has done a number on our culture. It's changed the way we think about a lot of things. And it was marketed. It was sold to a nation that certainly at the time was largely, and we could say it's Christian today in a certain sense, but even more so when Roe v. Wade became the law of the land in 1973. So for abortion to become the law of the land, it had to overcome a number of barriers and had to overcome a number of social stigmas right here in what we call a Christian nation.
That's post-Roe. How was the idea sold pre-Roe? We're talking back to the days of this one individual, Margaret Sanger, who also proved to be a great marketer of not only abortion, but a lot of very malignant ideas. Who is this woman?
Well, if I can, go a little bit, trace this out a little bit. I was born in May of 1966. And my own personal journey, if I may, I found a Reader's Digest, which I bought in a garage sale. And I never looked at it until a few years later. And I took it off my bookshelf. And on the Reader's Digest, there was an article by a man by the name of Lawrence Lader, and he's a significant person in our history. Lawrence Lader is often called to in the inner circles as the father of abortion. I mean, I love these kind of titles. There's the mother of birth control, if that were possible, and then there's the father of abortion. Well, Lawrence Lader was one of the fathers of abortion, along with another man who we probably should mention later by the name of Bernard Nathanson. And he wrote this article in Reader's Digest, and it said, "Let's speak about abortion." Now, I don't know how many of our, certainly our young people, know about Reader's Digest, but that is kind of like the mom and apple pie publication.
I read that when I was going to sleep on my grandmother's couch in her basement on Christmas vacation, a stack of Reader's Digest next to me.
Right, and my own grandma had all the Reader's Digest classic books, and it was probably good that way. They even had a Reader's Digest Bible for those of us who didn't want to have to work through the whole thing. But it would certainly seem like innocuous. It certainly seemed like a kind of a thing you could trust. So to see an article by Lawrence later in that, it was stunning. And as I worked through the article, it was 1966, so think about that, 7 years before Roe v. Wade. He laid out the argument to suburban housewives, really. And by the way, one I love, if you go back and look at the magazine, you can see advertisements for prunes. And there's another one. I think it's Lutheran Brotherhood at the time, but it was good, solid Lutheran people who were reading this, along with all the other Christians and probably a demographic that were the housewives of our society. And Lawrence later sold abortion to them, and he did so in such a way he created fear. He used the kind of lies and euphemisms that we associate with abortion, and we could go through those. But to get to your Sanger question, I was kind of wondering, now, where did Lawrence later get these ideas, and how did he become so animated? And he was animated. In fact, it wasn't his first great bestseller, but his bestseller in 1966 was called Abortion. And then, in 1973, he had a second book, and you can guess what it was titled. It was called Abortion 2. I don't know how you can have a sequel to an abortion. So the guy was obsessed, and he remained so until he died in the 1990s. But where did he get his ideas? I found out, and I looked his name up, in a New York Times obituary, and this is commonly known, he wrote a biography of Margaret Sanger, and that was in around the year 1960. So it was in that time period, in the late 50s, where he got to know her very well, and he drank from her ideas, and her ideas became his own. In fact, when you look at the ideas behind abortion and how it was sold, they were nearly identical to those which were sold by Margaret Sanger and birth control. So he was not necessarily a creative person himself, but he was able to take those ideas from Sanger. And what we find out about Sanger, we can talk about that too, is she must have been a kind of a witch of a woman. Not just that she was evil, but she seemed to be able to cast spells on men, because she was an older lady and she also had an affair, a long-term affair with Lawrence later, but this was her whole life. She seemed to have a kind of a bewitching kind of personality by which she could draw men into her way of thinking. And this was Lawrence later.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about the early marketing of abortion. Dr. Peter Scare is our guest here on Issues Etc. We're broadcasting from the symposia at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, where Dr. Scare serves as Associate Professor of New Testament. He's also made a presentation at a recent LCMSU conference titled Margaret Sanger's Trojan Horse. We'll be right back.
Christianity once turned the world upside down. Is it still true? Join us for the Village Lutheran Lectures on Christianity and Culture on February the 7th, 2 to 4 p.m., as Dr. Alvin Schmidt reminds us of the Church's rich heritage of turning the world upside down and invites us to continue that very thing today. Join us at Village Lutheran Church, 9237 Clayton Road in suburban St. Louis.
You can sing and recite the church's hymn book, the Psalms, using modern English and new musical settings in the new Concordia Psalter. Check it out at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase the Concordia Psalter by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Make the Concordia Psalter part of your devotional life this year. 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, the new Concordia Psalter.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Faith Lutheran Church and School in Plano, Texas preaches Christ crucified. Join us each Lord's Day to hear law and gospel preaching and receive the Lord's Supper. Our classical preschool through grade 12 Lutheran school is second to none. The school serves home educators, too, with online classes in the high school. We are located at 1701 East Park Boulevard in Plano, Texas. Reach us by phone at 972-423-7448 or on the web at www.flsplano.org.
Talking about the early marketing of abortion. Dr. Peter Scare is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're coming to you live from the symposia at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And on the subject of the early marketing of abortion, if you have a question or a comment, feel free to give us a call, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. You can send us a tweet at IssuesETC or our beloved on-demand listeners. We know that you like to ask questions, make comments. The Issues Etc. comment line, 223-8382, 618-223-8382. Talk a little bit about the career. You introduced us to this very obviously alluring but wicked woman, Margaret Sanger. Talk about her career and you say her strategy as well.
Yeah, Margaret Sanger, she began, when you think about abortion, you think 1973 Roe v. Wade, and it comes out of the, I guess, the sexual revolution of the 1960s. We think of Woodstock and all of that. But really, the roots are go much deeper. And we could go back to Margaret Sanger as being perhaps the most influential person in the 20th century. And she began in the 19-teens, so this is a long time ago. And she began as kind of a communist. She was a rebel. And this was the days when, you know, red was rising in Russia, and it also was rising in our own nation as well. And she began, her father was a socialist, and I think also was not too loving to her. But she began a magazine called Woman Rebel. So when you think of I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar, it started a long time ago. And she started this magazine in 1914, so if you think about it. And in this magazine, Woman Rebel, it was under the first masthead was, No Gods, No Masters. And so you can think of, you know, the overthrowing of male dominance went hand in hand with the overthrowing of the fatherhood of God and of God in general. So she was very much saw religion as an enemy of women and an enemy of humanity. And she also was very much at the beginning, she saw sex, again, think about the sexual revolution, as a kind of new religion, as a way for illumination, and as a way to kind of a primordial joy that could be had, a kind of a path to paradise. And if you're interested, by the way, Margaret Sanger's writings are available online. Just look up her books. One of them is called The Pivot of Civilization. And you can look and read for yourself. The other is, it does sound kind of Nazi, is Woman and the New Race. Women at the New Race. Well, she started off as kind of a communist. And she went into the neighborhoods, the poor neighborhoods, and she was sounding the cry of revolution. And she was sounding the cry of sexual revolution. And she was successful to a certain extent. However, you know, you're not going to sell sexual revolution and you're not going to sell communism to middle America. Certainly not to the kind of neighborhoods that she was. And she had a friend by the name of Havelock Ellis. Havelock Ellis was the leading sexpert of the day. So he was before there was ever Dr. Ruth, if people remember her, before there were ever sex experts like Dr. Joyce Brothers or Masters and Johnson, there was Havelock Ellis. And Havelock Ellis was one of those, and there were many, who were part of the free love movement. And this was in England. And she developed a relationship with him. But he was also a wiser man, I suppose, than Margaret Sanger at the time. And what he advised Margaret to do, he says, you know, you've got the fervor, you've got the ideas, but you're not going to sell your ideas to middle America. And now part of our ideas, I mean, you think about it, part of our ideas was, of course, birth control, because she saw birth control as being a way by which a woman could be freed from the consequences of sex and therefore freed also from the mastery of the man. So
it's all of one cloth here. These are liberating tools for her.
It really is. And again, when you think about it today, once you talk about abortion, you've got to talk about family. You've got to talk, they are related. And then you talk about God, because ultimately it comes down to God. But so Havelock Ellis said, you've got to sell it to middle America. And it was at that time that she started to sell the birth control movement, not simply for the sake of the poor, for the sake of women, but she used it as a kind of a liberation of the suburban housewife. And what she did, and I think we have to be wary of this, especially I'm a Lutheran, have to be wary of this, she did it by dividing Catholics and Protestants. And what she said was, well, look, there are external controls. The Catholics are controlled by a pope who lives in Italy. You are Protestant Americans. You are free women. You can make your own moral choices. You can make your decisions based on your conscience, not based upon what somebody else says to you. The other thing to consider, which is fascinating, is that she really worked primarily through the Republican Party.
Really?
So when you think about the divide that we have today, the Democrats represented a greater pro-life front. And that is because they were tied to the Catholic Church. So what Margaret Sanger did, she especially went after the immigrant population. And she would speak about the swarthy Italians and the Irish, the kind of people who are coming, I suppose, from the southern Europe, the Hungarians, the people that are not the Anglo-Saxons. And so what she did was she cast those people as being, and you always got to watch for this phrase, the reckless breeders. So they became like animals, the Catholics were. And these people were living in Catholic slums. And they, frankly, they frightened, I suppose, Protestant America. Because the demographic switch between the immigrants who were coming in and having children and the Protestants who were not, it was frightening to them. So what she tried to do was create a divide. And we have to remember that up until the 1920s, 1930s, all Christians had a stance against birth control. Certainly our own Lutheran Church in Missouri Synod did. We could look at the writings of a person who's very beloved is the Lutheran Hour speaker, Walter Meyer. He wrote about this. The first idea was to divide and conquer. And the first thing she did was to go after the Catholics. The other thing she did, which was quite appealing, I think, to when you think about the Republican Country Club kind of mentality, she went after also the African Americans. She was a very popular speaker in the Ku Klux Klan because I did have a quote. She talked about, the immigrant populations being reckless breeders. She says she wanted to create a race of thoroughbreds. And this is my favorite it's terrible, terrible. She believed in eugenics, and she sold eugenics because think about eugenics even today, this mentality that we have. We want to have,
We don't have big families anymore, but we want to have one or two children who are just perfect. They're good in sports. They're good in music. In every way, the helicopter parent mentality. Well, when you have a lot of kids, well, you can have a few duds along the way. But when you have a couple of kids, then they got to be great. Well, what she said was, we want to save the precious metals of culture. That's M-E-T. Metals of racial culture fused into an amalgam of physical perfection, mental strength, and spiritual progress. Now, these ideas are being sold to middle America. Now, these are the same ideas. We beat the Nazis to it. It was the Nazis who came and learned from Margaret Sanger, not the other way around. So, but it was in this movement of physical perfection that Planned Parenthood, for that's where Planned Parenthood came from, and the birth control movement came from. Having better children, healthier children, smarter children, we can improve the human race, we can have a master race, a super race, and we can do it by limiting those populations that bring us down.
So there's this immigration. She plays upon the fears of Protestant America, saying they're going to outbreed you and eventually outvote you, these kinds of things. They will take over the country. She plays upon the – and it's almost inconceivable in the 21st century, but yes, people thought this was a really good idea to breed for better people or to breed certain aspects of the human existence away. They thought it very much like animal husbandry. She does all of this stuff, and the American public accepts it.
Well, you know, the other thing is follow the money.
Okay.
because they're financially, the thing is, there are going to be some people, by the way, who feel uncomfortable as we talk about these things, because birth control has become such a part of the way we think about things. And I just want to say up front that, you know, I bought into this kind of thinking myself. I have three kids. And part of my own thinking was, well, I want my kids to have a good opportunity in life. And so it builds upon kind of good motives in people, because I want my kid to be able to go to college. I want them to be successful. I want to have the right insurance for them. So there's a lot of things going on. But you could imagine it being sold into an upwardly mobile America, in which a smaller family also then meant an opportunity to become wealthier, an opportunity. Now, what you see, it's interesting talking about this this racial component, that's still alive, not only in birth control, but certainly it morphed over into the abortion movement. We've had the opportunity to bring in some just wonderful speakers here into our Fort Wayne area, and one of the best on the civil rights front was Alveda King. Mm-hmm. She's the niece, as you know, of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., whose day we celebrated. And when she comes to give her civil rights speech, she talks about the abortion issue. But the other thing she talks about is how birth control and then abortion were both targeted at the African-American community, because, again, we felt uncomfortable with them. The slums and the ghettos are the place of danger. They're the place of where the neighborhoods are going bad. So from very early on, Planned Parenthood was putting their business right into the lowest socioeconomic neighborhoods, and that especially meant black people. But maybe talking about how these things it's the funniest thing. Republicans are now the pro-life party, although we can talk about, you know, how pro-life are they? Not as much as we'd like. But if you look at the history of it all, you'll find the best pro-life statements coming from Democrats. Because at least, you know, one of the great pro-lifers, if you could imagine it, was Senator Ted Kennedy. He wrote beautifully about pro-life until he turned in the early 70s. Because they actually at least purported to care about the poor, the kind of people that maybe we had hoped to come and that are invited by our Statue of Liberty, giving me your poor and the people that are considered by others, I suppose, as the refuse of society in America, we've embraced as the underdog. The Democrats, I think, understood this. And if you actually go back to the Nixon tapes to see how this all came in, as a kid, I was a Nixon supporter. Because I was just a kid, but I thought, well, Richard Nixon, he represents what's good about America and keeping the old values. But he supported abortion precisely because you needed something to keep those people down. And if they bred too much, then all chaos would come out. And that was the abortion, reason for abortion, and that was also the way we could sell birth control.
So how is it that these ideas that were so clearly stated by someone like Margaret Sanger early on, eventually, well, they're obviously successful, but nowadays if you try and make that connection for someone who promotes abortion or even with Planned Parenthood, they will say, oh, that's not what we're about. We are not about targeting minorities or about racism or about eugenics or any of those things. How did we get from that very unnuanced position of Margaret Sanger and, as you mentioned, Lever as well, to Planned Parenthood saying, well, sure, she founded our organization, but we're not some sort of utopian eugenic society.
Yeah, I mean, here, I waffle between thinking these folks are ignorant and thinking they know full well and they've just bought into our ideology and don't want us to know. These ideas are so common. And the thing is, Margaret Sanger preached this doctrine publicly. She did it in her books, her eugenics. And she talked about these things. Nothing was hidden that she was doing. And yet people seem to have a kind of amnesia. Now, in one sense, like you could look at a person like today, Hillary Clinton will tout Margaret Sanger as being one of the great heroines, one of the great heroes of the 20th century. And you kind of wonder, how could this be? What was stunning to me, I think, as I was looking at this for the first time, it was not simply how the pagan world or the left world or whatever world embraced Margaret Sanger. What really hit home to me was how we as Christians bought into this, and what hit home even more, it wasn't the ELCA type Christians who bought into it. I know there wasn't an ELCA, it wasn't the liberal kind of people that were buying into it. It was conservative Christians who were buying into it, people like us.
Well, let's talk about that on the other side of the break, because there's a dark chapter in our own history on this particular subject where I think it stood on knife's edge in many ways for the future of confessional Lutherans in America to compromise on the issue of abortion, a very loud voice saying, you know, Margaret Sanger, she's got a lot of good ideas. We ought to be listening to her on these issues of birth control and abortion. We'll talk about that with Dr. Peter Scare on the other side of the break. We're discussing the early marketing of abortion on this Thursday afternoon, January the 22nd. Dr. Peter Scare is Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He made a presentation at a recent LCMSU conference titled Margaret Sanger's Trojan Horse. They determine the sex, choosing our life over your life meant your death, and you never got a chance to even open your eyes. Sometimes I wonder as a fetus, if you fought for your life, would you have been a little genius in love with math? Would you have played in your school clothes and made me mad? Would you have been a little...
What if we made it clear to the Sunday morning visitor that Jesus is actually present, forgiving sins? I've written the second part of my essay, Lord's Day, Lord's House, Lord's Supper, and you can read it in the latest Issues Etc. journal. Just click the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. The Wittenberg Trail feature details Pastor Eric Rapp's journey from the New Age through Methodist Pietism to Confessional Lutheranism, the free online Issues Etc. journal.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. LutherAcademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.
South Africa.
China.
Germany.
Trinidad and Tobago.
Did you know that people listen to Issues Etc. around the world? India.
Sweden.
Egypt.
France.
Turkey.
Japan.
Australia.
Canada.
United Kingdom.
Hong Kong. Austria.
Finland. Malaysia.
Singapore.
Bulgaria.
Korea.
Brazil.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Help us proclaim Christ to the world.
The Philippines.
Mexico.
Spain.
New Zealand.
Kuwait.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Holy Trinity Lutheran, Garfield, New Jersey. Grace Lutheran, Naples, Florida. St. John's Lutheran, Chicago, Illinois. St. Paul Lutheran, Unionville, Michigan. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Beverly Hills, California. Epiphany Lutheran, Door, Michigan. The Good Shepherd Lutheran, Inglewood, California. St. John's Lutheran, Sayville, New York. Apostles Lutheran, Melrose Park, Illinois. Christ Our Savior Lutheran, Elizabeth, Colorado. Grace Lutheran, Strasburg, Illinois. And Bethel Lutheran, Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal, the Issues Etc. 300.
You can call it what you like.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're broadcasting live from the Symposia Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on this Thursday afternoon, January the 22nd, the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, talking about the early marketing of abortion. Dr. Peter Scare is our guest, Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary here in Fort Wayne. This is the part, and you're quite right. I mean, so influential, so well marketed were the ideas of Margaret Sanger that there is a glowing publication from Concordia Publishing House of that day from one of our leading theologians, if I'm not mistaken, saying, you know, this Margaret Sanger, she's the next best thing to sliced bread. I mean, that's almost how great the praise of this book is. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I mean, this was, I guess, I was naive. I had no idea. And I was it was after that, looking at Reader's Digest and seeing how abortion was being sold in 1966. And then I came upon a publication published by our own, I say our own, Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, Concordia Publishing House. And it was called, I could not believe it, Planned Parenthood. Well, I guess I could believe it, because when I first saw the title, I thought, well, this will be a theological kind of takedown of Margaret Sanger and her movement. Because obviously we're going to show the biblical way. But I knew right away that that wasn't the case, because it was a kind of a beautiful cover of the book. It's bright yellow, couldn't miss it. And on that cover was like the perfect family. And the perfect family looks like, you have the man with his hair perfectly combed. I wish I had the hair now. And his beautiful wife. And they,
you've got one of those, though.
Oh, I got going for me. I got no worries. The family was one child. And they chose a daughter for it. But it was just a beautiful girl. But the message, picture paints a thousand words, or the message was the beautiful family is the small family. Now, this should hit home to almost everybody who goes to a church, because I'm here at the seminary, and one of the things that we always get on our call documents, what they want in our young men who go out to be their pastors, is they always say, can he work well with youth? Because there are not a lot of young people in our church. And this is every single church. And there's a reason for it. And I think, you know, at first, in my mind, I thought, well, the 50 million of abortion, or 55 million, those children would be with us. Those people would be filling our pews. But even more than that, it was birth control that did it. And I'm the father of three kids, so I'm not standing here on my platform telling everybody else that they're wrong. I'm joining in this and saying, you know, maybe we were sold a bill of goods and we bought it and we've got to step back and we've got to look at this thing again. So this book was Planned Parenthood, and what it was really praise of Margaret Sanger, but given a kind of a Christian veneer, so that there was nothing, and this was written by, again, I say this not to disparage anybody, but Professor Alfred Winkle, Ray Winkle. He is, I just laugh because we have very conservative publications in our synod. Some are dated, and you know, you look at these things. And this professor, he's held up as this great icon of conservative Christianity because he believed in the flood and he believed in Noah. And it's like, wow, isn't this great?
He wrote books on that stuff too.
Oh, I know. I'm so glad that Jonah was actually swallowed by that whale of fish. Mm-hmm. Isn't that great? And of course, I believe that too. But you know, at the end of the day, maybe that's not the biggest thing. Well, it is. It's the Bible, right? But on the other hand, a person who could be so conservative in that way, boy, does he represent a time and a period which we were falling quickly away from the way the Bible looked upon things much more basic, and that was children. And his ideas, I mean, he called it Planned Parenthood. That was no accident. He named it after the organization. And the organization, it was becoming international in the 1950s. And I think before it was the Birth Control League, but that's too negative. When it went international, by the way, the leaders were, it was bipartisan. It was Eisenhower, President Eisenhower, and President Truman. So we have the Democrat and the Republican both against the overpopulation of the world. Well, look what we've done to ourselves and to our churches. This was sold in Japan. That's why there are no young people there. This was sold in Europe, which is why their population is shrinking and they're having the problems that they're having now. So, yeah, it was sold by Ray Winkle to a willing church, to a suburban church, to people like you and me. And what it did was it sanitized Margaret Sanger to the point of laughability. So he writes a chapter about what kind of a woman she was. And I mean, St. Paul didn't undergo the kinds of things that this dear woman did as she was struggling to help the poor. She had her catalog of hardships that none of us could imagine. And then it talks about her divorce. It's quite humorous because it's like, well, she stuck with her husband and then later, of course, had divorced. No. You know, she was married to, interesting, like a socialist communist and also a fool because he thought by being, the more communist I am, then she'll love me more. Nah, she just went to England and had a series of lovers. She had no use for him. So what happened was somehow Ray Winkle, and somebody's going to have to do the historical work on that. I think it was through his wife who was she was a physician out west and also kind of a hero. But I think the ideas of Margaret Sanger might have come through her. That's what it looks like to me. But when he describes her, it's completely his hagiography. It's completely as if she is the secular saint. And then what he does is he takes all of Sanger's arguments, things like overpopulation. Sanger produced it, and then he gives Bible passages which show that it's okay. He takes us back to Genesis, be fruitful and multiply, and he goes, well, that doesn't really apply to us anymore. And he was no prophet. Ray Winkle's always trying to assure us that, no, don't worry. He says, birth control in no way will encourage more sex outside of marriage. Just because you have the pill doesn't mean that all of a sudden you're going to live a life of sex apart from the bonds of marriage. And anyway, you can't have a morality that's simply based upon law. So it was kind of a weird law-gospel thing. It's like, and when people say, by the way, well, I don't want you to do that just because of the law, I'm happy to do it just because of the law. If God's law says don't do it, then I want you to be really afraid of doing it.
And actually, that's a good enough reason not to.
Yeah,
do it.
I'm sick of gospel motivation. I mean, there is a point when you have to say, I'm not just pro-life, but I'm anti-killing, you know? So we need to be a little bit more clear with our people. But he made it so cerebral. And the other thing I think he was able to work with the Lutheran idea that the conscience matters. So, yeah, the conscience does matter, but kind of like at the end of the day, what mattered to him is that you could go to bed with a good conscience. But he helped you go to bed with a good conscience instead of saying, I want to go to bed not having harmed somebody. I mean, it's what I've done that makes a difference in the world, not simply that I go to bed with a clear conscience. And see, when you think about it this way, This is how the whole abortion thing switched around in our church, because we were not thinking about the baby anymore. We were thinking about, well, can I have a good conscience? And if I do it, yes, I can have forgiveness.
Can I sleep at night?
Yeah, can I sleep at night? Well, the baby won't sleep and the baby won't wake up. And, you know, jumping ahead of this, because I think, you know, I don't want to just jump on Ray Winkle, but the thing that changed it, I think, for our own church body, and I think changed the whole movement, was a person like Jean Staker Garten, who wrote a book called, and it's very telling. She wrote a book called Who Broke the Baby? You put the baby there. I don't care whether you can go to sleep at night. I want the baby to live. And that's what changed abortion, because now we're not talking about some sort of intellectual thing about, and we know, ethics and morality. We're talking about kids. So, you know, when you look at this thing that Ray Winkle did, again, I don't want to pick on him, because I do think in many ways he was simply voicing and giving permission for us to do what we were already doing. And I think he really is part of the times, the zeitgeist. And, like, for one thing, it's very funny. He says, don't worry about, you know, smaller families. He says, you know, in the natural course of things, in the Planned Parenthood movement, there will always be, and he says, like, normal-sized families. And by normal-sized, he means 7 or 8 kids. Oh, yeah, that'll always be the case. And it's in the Planned Parenthood movement. Well, you can look at Margaret Sanger and look at the books that she actually wrote. One of the chapters of her books is entitled The Wickedness of Creating Large Families. This is not like in fine print. This is not like in a footnote. It's the wickedness of creating large families. And she said that was the greatest evil of the 20th century, was too many people. Not the Nazis killing the Jews, not the Russians putting out 30 million here. It was actually having children. And so I don't know what to do with a person like Ray Winkle. Did he possibly not know it? I want to be an Eighth Commandment person. But he was a professor, you know, so I think he should be held accountable. And we should call him to task, and God bless him. And I do think in his own mind, to be fair to him, he never said, I believe in abortion. But what he did was very interesting, because he said, whenever he talked about abortion, he says, I'm against criminal abortion. So, like, at the day, because it wasn't against the law then, so I'm against criminal abortion. And so he set the table so that when it became legal, well, that's okay then. The other thing he did was he bought into this notion about the stages of pregnancy. So then he says, well, the first stage, it's not really much there. And then in the second stage, there's a development. What he did not talk about was biblically. See, he took the ideas of Sanger, and he just went from there. Instead of, like, he never says, for instance, when we look at a pregnancy, we think about the conception of the Holy Spirit, Christ's conception by the Holy Spirit, whereby new life came in, whereby Christ made himself a member of our family. Our humanity is defined by Jesus right there in the womb of Mary. That's how we think of human beings. He never said that. He always took us to the edge of things. He never went over the edge, and God bless him for that. In promoting abortion, I don't think that was even on the table yet. I think there probably was a little naivete, too, to what he was doing.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll conclude our conversation here with Dr. Peter Scare on the early marketing of abortion. Perhaps Ray Winkle is an example here of how well it was sold. Of course, there is also the sad fact that he was not alone, that the move for the legalization of abortion was largely a movement from within mainline Protestant church bodies. We'll talk about that a little bit as well with Dr. Peter Scare on the other side of the break. We're broadcasting live from the Symposia at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on this Thursday afternoon, January the 22nd. Dr. Peter Scare is Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary, and he made a presentation at a recent LCMSU conference titled Margaret Sanger's Trojan Horse.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org.
sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Thank you, Todd, and thanks for everything you do.
Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, on the value of issues, etc.
You've done so much to teach so many people about the depth of the gospel and to find joy in the Christian life and experience.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, issues, etc. Listen to what you want, when you want, at issuesetc.org.
An umbilical cord of biblical truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Our school is committed to authentic Lutheranism, the entire Book of Concord, and indeed to authentic Lutheranism as it has continued to be confessed and practiced through the centuries right up into our own time.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie, chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We're committed then to biblical, confessional Christianity and Lutheranism and applying it to the world of today in as effective a way as we can.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or call 1-800-481-2155, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. 10 more minutes in our conversation with Dr. Peter Scare. We're talking about the early marketing of abortion. In just a few minutes in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., Dr. Jay Budziszewski will join us. We'll discuss the new paganism. All right, Peter, we do need to discuss a couple things. This was an idea that was sold explicitly to the church. They knew that if they could get religious leaders to buy into this, and boy have they, mainline Protestant denominations almost across the board, either tolerate or in favor of abortion. They get a lot of money from those organizations as well. And then through the churches, obviously, kind of the average church-going American as well. What are some of the other strategies that they used in trying to market abortion to Americans?
Well, one was, I think, simply empowerment. And this was true for the birth control and the pill. And then it was true for abortion. And I read this in Lawrence Lader's book and then in his articles, says no woman can be free unless she has control over her own body. So this was part of the liberation movement. And this was for Margaret Sanger. I mean, she was the great early feminist. She was the liberationist, but it was liberation from men. And she had terrible things to say, for instance, about the marriage bed. She said the marriage bed was the most degrading institution that in our society, and that it was shackles upon the women. So it was a matter of, and of course for Americans, freedom sounds good. Liberty sounds good. The other part, I suppose, is just a lot of euphemisms that were sold. So when you look at like Lawrence Lader, when he actually had to go, it is a difference to go from birth control to abortion, certainly conceptually. And part of it was to hide behind, or to hide what was actually happening. And we still see that today. That the last thing the leader of Planned Parenthood wants to talk about is the child in the womb. They want to talk about the mother. They want to talk about the surgery, which is the smallest of all surgeries. It's hardly anything compared to like taking an appendix out or any kind of tissue. So it was a matter of minimization, and it was a matter of taking the child off of the mind.
There is a good story in this, and this is that one of the founders of Planned Parenthood, if I'm not mistaken, later realized the error of his ways and the malignancy of these ideas. Tell us that story with about a minute here.
This is the St. Paul of the pro-life movement. Lawrence Lader was the father of the abortion movement, but his co-founder of NARAL, the National Abortion Action Rights League, the co-founder was Bernard Nathanson. And Bernard Nathanson was a brilliant man. He was also an abortion doctor. He ran the largest abortion clinic in the United States. He performed some 20,000 abortions. What kind of a guy was he? He actually aborted his own child. Well, this man started to look at the science of it. In the mid-70s, he started to write books saying, maybe we've gone too far with abortion. What changed his mind? What changed his heart? He went to an abortion clinic. He started to watch the silent protests. He went there and he saw Christians surrounding the abortion protest, and they were singing songs, and they were praying. And he looked at their faces. He looked at their serenity. He looked at the peace which they had. And he says, what do these Christians have that I don't have? Why am I lacking this? And he came to the faith through that. He came through the witness of pro-life people standing up for Christ. He came to know Christ. And he describes it like the woman touching the hem of the garment of Christ. And he says, there, when I found Christ, it was like all the past had melted away. And I know that that man who lived 2,000 years ago shed his blood, even for a murderer like me. He was the St. Paul, and he spent his entire life from then on dedicated to the cause of life, proclaiming the truth that really every child matters.
Dr. Peter Scare is Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He made a presentation at a recent LCMSU conference titled Margaret Sanger's Trojan Horse. Peter, it's always a pleasure. It's good to sit next to you for a change.
Yeah.
Thanks for being our guest. When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Dr. Jay Budziszewski. We've been talking with him for years now. You probably know him from the books that we've talked about. Oh, we've talked about The Revenge of Conscience, one of my favorites, What We Can't Not Know, and many other books. We're going to talk to him about the new paganism on this Thursday afternoon. Feel free to join us for Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. as we broadcast live from the Symposium at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Our call-in number 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Or for our beloved on-demand listeners, you can always use the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. We'll be right back with Hour 2.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.